Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. During this centennial year of the ratification of the 19th Amendment, which assured that women in the United States have a right to vote, SDPB has embarked on a project to tell the history of suffrage in South Dakota. Today, we continue our look at that history with the profile of Mabel Ruman of the Black Hills. Here to tell us more about the story is Kelly Kirk, instructor of history and the director of the University Honors Program at Black Hills State University. Kelly also has a chapter in the book, Equality at the Ballot Box, Votes for Women on the Northern Great Plains. Kelly, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Tell me the first time that you, as a historian, met Mabel Ruman. When did you know that she existed and that she had done work in the Black Hills and beyond?
I was actually reading through Dorinda Reason's Reed's master's thesis, and she had mentioned Mabel's work in the Black Hills, and it was the first kind of individual name from the Black Hills that I had seen. And I remember digging around in other sources, trying to kind of learn a little bit more about the Black Hills. And Mabel's name kind of came up time and again. I just remember thinking, this is an individual I'd really like to learn more about.
Right. And how often are those stories just not told at all? And we'll get to that. We'll get to Mabel's work and making sure some of these stories are preserved in the first place. But let's start with who she is. How does she end up in South Dakota?
She has kind of a fascinating story because it kind of represents, right, the movement of the time where she, you know, kind of spends a lot of time throughout the Midwest before ending up in Washington State, caring for an ill sister. And she ends up becoming involved with the Washington State Equal Suffrage Association and their suffrage campaign, and works with Emma Smith DeVoe, who had been a South Dakota resident. So there's a fun little connection there. But it's not long after that she marries Paul Ruman, who managed the Black Hills Telephone Exchange in Deadwood. And she moved with him to Deadwood. And it feels like that move was kind of momentous for both Deadwood, but then also for the future of the women's suffrage movement in the state.
I love this part in the chapter where it talks about her husband's assistant having left, and now she has to sort of lend a hand at the office. And how many women can relate to that? You know, they're doing this important work, and then suddenly, oh, I have to, a little bit of sideline, taking care of a sick relative, helping out at my husband's office. Tell me a little bit about some of the work that she did do, though, in the state, and why was she so effective at it?
You know, she, when she moved to Deadwood, she became kind of immediately involved in, you know, the Women's Auxiliary Business Association and the Roundtable Club. And the Roundtable Club is this one of the longest, kind of oldest women's organizations in Deadwood. And, you know, by 1917, she had already become a leader of the Deadwood Equal Suffrage Association and also was volunteering for the Red Cross, you know, as World War I broke out. So she's very well known and well connected in her own community. And she is actually kind of chased down by Mamie Shields Pyle, the president of the South Dakota Universal Franchise League, so the president of the state organization, because she has heard Mabel Ruman speak. She's seen her at kind of statewide meetings because of her role in Deadwood, and she handpicks Mabel to become the state finance chair for the 1918 campaign. And you can kind of tell that Mabel must have been slightly hesitant, that she didn't think she could raise money. She didn't think that was her skill set. And Mamie Shields Pyle kind of keeps on her. And eventually Mabel's like, well, if you believe I'm the one, I will, you know, give it my best shot. And they had a lot, you know, to work with at the time. And the fact that, you know, they're competing for fundraising with fundraising for World War One, and then the 1918 Spanish flu hits, and we see resources, you know, kind of stretched to their limits. And yet Mabel travels the state to fundraise and receive significant donations. She, you know, goes to conferences in Washington, D.C. She hosts national suffrage speakers, even brings the suffrage schools that the National American Woman Suffrage Association was sponsoring to South Dakota. So she accomplishes so much, you know, despite kind of everything in the background, and having women take time off either for Red Cross work for the war or to care for ill loved ones and neighbors during the influenza. And so, you know, her story kind of represents, I think, the story of so many of those who were working towards suffrage in 1918. It's just that kind of because of her position within the state organization, her individual story might be told in a little more detail.
Yeah. What's a suffrage school?
These were kind of fascinating. The national organization would send kind of a variety of speakers into communities, and they would host, it was called a suffrage school, and it kind of trained the individuals in that community on how to campaign for suffrage, how to talk to people about suffrage, different ways of working with the media and kind of articulating arguments for suffrage. But then there was also kind of a section on, you know, what to do once you've achieved the vote. Like, how do you turn the vote into action? And so they hosted them in, I think it was three different communities, including Deadwood.
Interesting. So let's talk a little bit about how her story is preserved. How do you find it today, and what, you know, as a researcher, and what was her role in making sure that the story, I mean, did she have a sense, I guess what I'm wondering is, did she have a sense as she was living this history that it was important and it needed to be talked about, or was she more humble and kind of not writing about her own journey? What was her take on the history that she was living?
You know, her researching Mabel has been really interesting. You know, we don't have necessarily her own papers that I've been able to really uncover. The letters you have from Mabel are actually in the Mamie Shields Pyle collection. You know, they were ones that she had kept when she submitted her, you know, records to the archives after the success of 1918. But the one thing that Mabel did really seem to realize is that as the suffrage generation was aging, that there was going to be limited amount of time to talk to those who had been active in the campaigns for suffrage. And so she worked with Herbert Shell you know, kind of asked this historian at the University of South Dakota if, you know, he could find anyone who'd be willing to work on this story. This is what leads to that master's thesis I, you know, first discovered Mabel's story in. Dorinda Reeson Reed was a graduate student. She kind of takes on this project, and she is able to interview Mabel and kind of go through Mabel's, you know, kind of documents and records and photos. Mabel kind of connects her to other women who've been involved in the movement. And this master's thesis kind of becomes the, I don't know, basis of the South Dakota suffrage story for decades, as it kind of becomes the, and it's still kind of the resource I think we go back to time and again, because it speaks to, you know, some of the suffragists personally.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about, if you will, the enthusiasm, or I guess, are you seeing an enthusiasm from other people as we look at this anniversary this year, and we're doing work on South Dakota Public Broadcasting on a documentary, and PBS is bringing The Vote to the screens later this summer. And I'm just wondering, as you do some of this research, what does it feel like to be researching suffragists in South Dakota and learning some of these stories of women whose names maybe we've never heard before?
There does seem to be quite the groundswell of interest and support. I think it's really fun to dive into a very local and personal story. You know, so often in suffrage history, you really just kind of hear about national suffragists. And while it's exciting to hear, you know, the visits by Susan B. Anthony or Jane Addams, you know, these really big names in the small South Dakota towns, finding out just how active these local communities were, hearing how you know, men and women in that community started organizations, fundraised, hosted events. It's really kind of fascinating because it just makes it such a more personal story. And, you know, you can really connect it because it also feels very tangible. You've been to these communities. Mm-hmm. You know these places where they gathered. You might have even attended an event at the Homestake Opera House yourself, and you can kind of imagine what that moment was like in 1918.
When we look at the national story, we see also how, you know, it wasn't inevitable. I think we sit back now and we think, well, of course, this would eventually be, of course, women would have the right to vote. What took so long? But when we look at the national story, there's, you know, there's protests and violence and hunger strikes and imprisonment, and these women really put themselves, put their families, their lives, their health, their reputations on the line to fight for something. In this area, in Dakota Territory, in South Dakota, are you seeing the same kind of contentious conversation? Or is it more, how does it unfold here in parallel with that national drama?
I think the story of suffrage everywhere is rather complex. And the more you dig into it, right, the more the story kind of comes out of that it was not the inevitable kind of course of progress. And there's a lot of fits and starts. You know, South Dakota is believed to have the most ballots for women's suffrage, you know, voted upon by a state. And so it was not an easy fight. And there were, strong, anti-suffrage campaigns. And we see the suffrage campaigns have to kind of adjust their arguments, you know, for every single time that the vote comes up to try and address the new anti-suffrage argument. Whether it was, you know, there was a lot of conflict with the prohibition movement and concern in South Dakota that, you know, voting or allowing women to vote would immediately lead to prohibition. And so that relationship is very contentious. And we see the liquor industry, especially in Deadwood, you know, the saloon leagues put a lot of money into the anti-suffrage campaigns. You see a lot of petitions and, speakers. There's the stories of, you know, anti-suffrage speakers following suffrage speakers so that, you know, anytime a suffrage speaker would present, you know, an anti-suffrage speaker would try and stand up or be there right after. And so there is definitely a level of contention or tension within South Dakota as it tries to grapple with suffrage and what that will mean. And we see that even in how South Dakota allowed for, you know, school suffrage earlier in its history, but didn't allow kind of full access to the ballot until 1918.
Is this how Mabel gets her ulcer? Just the contentiousness and the work that's laid out in front of her? There's a lot going on there.
And it's a changing landscape constantly with, you know, who is supporting and then we also see tensions sometimes between the state and the national organizations where the states have very clear ideas of what they think it's going to take to get suffrage passed in their state. And then the national organization sends out a speaker who may or may not fit in with the state and their goals.
Some things haven't changed, right?
I was going to say that, you know, the state definitely thought they knew what was best, but they needed the national for funding, and so there's definitely some tension there as well.
Oh, I love this story. Kelly Kirk is instructor of history and the director of the university's honor program, University Honors Program at Black Hill State University, and she's part of this book, Equality at the Ballot Box, Votes for Women on the Northern Great Plains. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We really appreciate your insight. It's a great, great conversation.
Well, thank you so much for your time and for spreading the stories of suffrage.